the Yankees are doing nothing, Colin Kaepernick is getting nothing, and there is a crisis in New York Knicks land with rookie Kevin Knox. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. That erupt, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you all new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, November 25th, 2019, and the show airs from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this show, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@parkmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website, L-L-O-Y-D, to help you out with the spelling. And me and Mad Mike are also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. Be sure to hit that follow button, and you can also shoot us questions through social media as we're keeping up with that as well. Listeners, great show for you as always. We're going to talk some New York Knicks basketball, as for some reason, the Knicks are not giving Kevin Knox the potential playing time that he needs to get to be a better player. We're going to touch up on that. And those guys are still just terrible. We're going to talk about the Knicks. We're going to talk about some football, as the Jets actually played very well this past Sunday against the Oakland Raiders. The Giants still look like absolute garbage, all right? And we're also going to talk some Colin Kaepernick. Was it a plan of Colin Kaepernick's to do what he did? That's been a debate. We're going to touch up on that and some other things as well. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lord, I'm home. I'm home for the holidays. So listen, I apologize if you hear any kids screaming and fighting.
And happy holidays, listeners, and, you know, to all the listeners and loved ones. And being that it's Thanksgiving weekend, we won't be doing a show the following Monday, because that's holiday weekend, and normally we stay clear of holiday weekends. So just giving you a heads up on that. But Mad Mike, you know, we talked about Colin Kaepernick last week, and let's continue to talk about Colin Kaepernick. Start the show for Colin Kaepernick, as there's been a lot going on since then. And I thought that Colin Kaepernick, from what I saw, from the video that I saw of Colin Kaepernick, I thought he still has elite arm strength, you know, fluidity in a pocket during his public workout last week. And there's reports that he's reportedly received zero interest from NFL teams. Zero. Absolutely zero. And the workout last week did absolutely nothing to enhance the chances that Colin Kaepernick is going to wind up with another NFL team. All right, there hasn't been a team that has requested a workout. There hasn't been a team that's requested a visit. There hasn't been a team that's expressed interest in signing him. So despite the fact that 1 week ago, we saw Colin Kaepernick work out at a high school down in the Atlanta area, it is not translated into any results. And no, the league wanted to try to help out, quote unquote, as they like to say, you know, at least said it was, you know, was trying to help out. Nothing came of it. And if Colin Kaepernick's way continues, and it looks like it's going to be continuing for a very, very long time, his NFL career is over, listeners. His NFL career is done, Mad Mike. You know, we thought it was a pony show with the NFL. You know, we talked about if the NFL really wanted to work him out, they would have did it on a Tuesday, because it's a universal off day, as you mentioned to the listeners, you know, and they wouldn't have waited if a team was seriously and you know, vying for his services, why would they want somebody else to beat them to the punch? Why would they do that? And then some people say Colin Kaepernick had ulterior motives, wearing a Kunta Kinte shirt and having people wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts, or whatever the case may be. But the bottom line is, when you're fighting for something that you believe in, you should never shortchange yourself or go away from what your goal is. So if his goal is what he started off with, and he made an enemy in the NFL, if he changed that, listeners, if he changed what he was fighting for, people will call him a sellout. I even heard one person say that if Colin Kaepernick was signed to a team, right, and he didn't take a knee, then he would be a sellout. And I wouldn't necessarily say he would be a sellout, but everything that he's fought for, that would be completely turning the other cheek if he did something like that. So I'm really not mad at him doing what he did. Obviously, you know, I was listening to somebody else listening to Mad Mike, and I was like, I didn't see nothing wrong with him wearing a Kunta Kinte shirt. But I think it was, I forgot the defensive player, Canty. Canty was talking on a show, and Canty was saying how he had a problem with him wearing a Kunta Kinte shirt was because Kunta Kinte was a fictional character from Roots, and that pertained to slavery, all right? And Colin Kaepernick is really not dealing with slavery, although, you know, some people say the NFL is being racist. And to me, racism and slavery, and I'm not trying to get into this, that could be, you know, viewed too, is completely different. You know what I'm saying? So when he said that, I was like, okay, I can see why people have an issue with him wearing the Kunta Kinte shirt, but I still don't see why people have an issue with him doing what he did as far as, you know, not agreeing to the contract and changing the venue. That's what he chose to do. And the only person that has to be okay with that decision, listeners, is Colin Kaepernick. And if Colin Kaepernick is okay with that decision, then I'm going to support him 1,000%. If he really wanted to play football, the CFL is up in Canada. He could go right up to the CFL, sign a contract. I'm sure the team will be more than willing to have them on a roster, sign a contract, and play in the CFL to show the NFL that he still has what it's got to be an NFL quarterback. But even despite that, there's no way, again, on God Green's earth, that anybody could tell me that Colin Kaepernick is not better than 64 quarterbacks currently in the NFL. You get to say your say-so on this, man, Mike. I'm sorry. I know that was a lot to take in. I'm sorry. I had to hit him with it, though. And let me just say also, I'm sorry, man, Mike, one more thing. Stephen A. Smith, man, you know, I've never seen somebody play both sides of the fence. One minute he wants to be like, you know, I'm a black man, I'm this and that. And then he does things that does, you know what I'm saying, that shows otherwise. Obviously, he is a black man. You can't change that. But I think sometimes he does things because it's pertaining to his job and what he does for ESPN, and he doesn't want to come under fire for that. And it's, I get that. You know, I if he chooses to do that, I understand. He came under hell of fire for the things he said during that whole process, man. Mike, I'm sorry. You can get ahead.
Yeah, well, to touch on the Kunta Kinte situation first, before I give any Colin Kaepernick thought, I didn't really, we said this last week, we like to keep race out of it. Especially in sports, because even though so much of sports is African American, it is truly multicultural, right? Like, there's Spanish athletes, there's white athletes, there's black athletes, there's Chinese athletes, et cetera, you know, all the way down the line. So, but I'll say one thing about that. Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote, "Race is the child of racism, not the father." When you think of these situations and you see him wearing that Kunta Kinte shirt, he's just acknowledging something that for the most part, I'd say, you know, 100% of the people he's doing this in support of know that there are racial lines. There are days where the color of your skin determines whether or not you make it home alive. Or in a box, you know what I mean? Like, that's real. Now, as far as Stephen A. goes, I don't know if you've seen this movie yet, American Son or the play, right? But there's a point in that movie where the lieutenant tells the black mother, basically, you were so caught up in trying to teach your child how to live the American dream. You forgot how to teach your child to.
Uh-oh, we lost Mad Mike at a very pivotal part of what he was trying to say. We'll wait for Mad Mike to come back in, but until we get Mad Mike, there you go. Yeah, Mad Mike, we got you again. Yeah.
So what he was basically saying was trying to give them the American dream, trying to raise them, you know, to not know those aspects. They forgot to teach them survival their survival instincts. You know what I mean? They didn't instill that in their child. Anyway, what I'm trying to say about Stephen A. is he forgets that sometimes, in my opinion. I don't think it makes him any less black than the next person. I just think that when you take it all into account, he's so far removed from the struggle, I think he forgets that there's so many other people that are in the struggle. When you tell, and I said this last week, but when you tell on the air Colin Kaepernick to conform to what the NFL is asking, to capitulate, to sign a waiver that basically exempts them from future law. If after his workout, nobody chooses to sign him, even though Jake Driscoll just lost another start for the Lions, the same Jake Driscoll that couldn't even crack the 49ers QB rotation when he played on the same team as Colin Kaepernick. Let's talk about that, right? So Stephen A., I always say this when he attacked Michael Beasley. He doesn't understand the weight of his words. I understand that there's a way to do things. I understand I'm not saying it's not okay to tell black people that you can be above this. You don't have to speak in Ebonics. I'm a believer in the fact that you don't have to fit the stereotype. No reason for it, right? But every time he goes about his business of knocking down another man, standing up for those who don't have a voice, he doesn't realize the damage he's doing in this situation. Now, as far as the workout goes, I'm not shocked, man. I'm not shocked because I'm sure that the NFL – this is what they see, right? This is, they're not seeing a man who's been blackballed for 3 years and said, I'm not going to put myself out there for you guys to control the narrative. I'm going to control the narrative. I did tell you I didn't agree with his words after, don't be scared. You know what I mean? Like, I agree in terms of putting the pressure on them, but I don't know if I would use those words because he looks combative. You don't want to give that, you know what I mean? Like, that's not the
right. He could have articulated his words a lot differently when he started talking about.
Correct, that. Because that's the, now whatever owner goes and signs you, now they're you know, they signed him because they weren't scared in the other. You know, you don't want to start that narrative either. So there, I do disagree with him. But you know, when you think about everything that he's been through the last 3 years, when you think about the fact that he was only given 2 months. 2 hours to take a bogus workout on a Saturday when no major scout would be in there to actually tell you what they saw or GM or, I mean, it was a setup. So I understand all that emotion boiling over, but, you know, it's everyone entitled to their opinion on the matter.
You know, I just want to point out that, just to reiterate, that Kaepernick worked out in front of 8 NFL teams last weekend in Atlanta, and he did back out of the league scheduled event in favor of his own, and a workout was streamed and made available to the media after Kaepernick and NFL could not come to terms, you know, as far as details of a tryout that was scheduled at the Falcons facility. So the whole thing is Stephen A. Smith was holding up one form, you know, with this is what I received from the NFL, and this is what I received from Colin Kaepernick's people. And the bottom line is that there was wording in the contract that Colin Kaepernick's people didn't feel comfortable with. And if that's the case, then why sign it? You know what I'm saying?
There was wording in the contract that is not in your standard, what's the word I'm looking for? When they host players for workouts, those waivers have specific wording. For some reason, they changed the wording in his, and we know why. And Stephen A. can say whatever he wants. He can you know, whatever jargon he wants to use to explain it away. We know that he's been used in this situation already multiple times. We know that to be fact. We know that he's been misled and fed information because, like you said, they know exactly what he's going to do, and they know what side of the fence he stands on. He doesn't stand with Cap. Like, everyone's like, I stand with Cap. He doesn't stand with Cap. So they're using him to get their message out, to go against him.
Boy, did he come under fire. The dude's just going at this dude's throat. Terrell Owens was on his show. He went at Stephen A. Smith's throat. An initial Colin Kaepernick workout came at the behest of the NFL rather than individual teams. So it's hard to determine, you know, the likelihood of if it gambled any interest. And we said it wouldn't gamble any interest at all. So there was likely additional fallout when Kaepernick pulled out the NFL workout again for one of his own, you know, given that only 8 teams made the trip. You know, there was at least 25 scheduled, and people were saying, oh, I know for a fact there were 2 teams that was interested. And let's talk about one other thing, Mad Mike. Hugh Jackson?
Yep.
Let's talk about Hugh Jackson. So they had Hugh Jackson supposedly orchestrating, I guess, the workout with Colin Kaepernick. Supposedly he was supposed to be there with Colin Kaepernick and kind of getting them together for the workout. Hugh Jackson was on the Stephen A. Smith show, and Hugh Jackson sided with the NFL. You don't know why he sided with the NFL? Because he can still get a job. There's still job opportunities for Hugh Jackson. You think Hugh Jackson was going to get on that very show, listeners?
Lloyd, let's talk about Hugh Jackson for a second, right? This is the same Hugh Jackson that came out and defended the NFL and their position against his own players in the locker room. You don't remember that? You don't remember he had to double back because he lost his locker room over this situation? Because he basically said, yeah, my players know there's consequences if they do that. You don't remember that?
Yeah, and there's a reason why they brought him. Somebody had to side with Stephen A. Smith, right? Somebody had to. And what better person to side with him than another black individual who was supposedly involved in the process of getting him to work out in front of the NFL teams? I was like,
look who it was. It doesn't make any sense.
Shout out to Max Kellerman, straight up. Shout out to Max Kellerman. He never swavered from his stance, and what he said, it wasn't like he was speaking out his ASS.
Yeah, but Max knows, man. Max.
You know what caused you know, Terrell Owens to say it. He said that Max Kellerman has more blackness than you, Stephen A. Smith, and that really offended Stephen A. Smith. Really offended.
I do think that in the way he said it, I think Terrell Owens was wrong.
Yeah, but no, he was, because I would have been, if anybody challenges.
What he was trying to say is, Max is more, he was trying to say Max is more in tune and more understanding of the situation than you are.
I mean, as an African-American man, if somebody questioned my blackness, especially would compare me to a white person, yeah, I would be totally offended by that, 1,000%. But you are right. He didn't say it the right way.
No, he said it wrong.
I didn't mean it to insult you, but you know what I mean, the way he said it, it was an insult. It was.
But let's be honest. Let's be honest. It's not like, listen, he's not the first one to do it. You had Rodney Harrison who said Colin Kaepernick isn't even black. Because he didn't realize Colin Kaepernick, a black man, was adopted by white parents. You see what I'm saying? So he hasn't been the first. He's not the only black man that has allowed themselves to be used in this situation to change the narrative. But, you know, in that moment in time, Terrell Owens, who is emotional about this, that's how they feel. Like, and it's sad to say it, but, you know, I'm not going to say that you're not allowed to your opinion, but if you can't understand what he's doing and why he's doing it enough to the point where you can't speak out against him, then you're tone deaf to the situation. You just are.
You know, then supposedly Jay-Z is disappointed in Colin Kaepernick. You know, so like I said, all this does is it just like, look, hey, I know you guys attacked me for joining forces with the NFL, but look what I did, guys. I orchestrated him getting a tryout.
But I told you that. But it was a bogus tryout. And he was doing it because he was more concerned with his rep. That's all Jay is concerned with. Let me tell you something. you can say whatever you want. If the black community turns their back on Jay-Z, well, then what? You know what I mean? Then what?
I would say, you know, a lot of people have. A lot of people it's funny you say that, you know, because Stephen A. Smith was like, I'm still, man, you still ain't on no damn streets. Get out of here with that nonsense.
And not only that, you got to think about something else. You're talking about Jay-Z's wife who performed at the Super Bowl in basically the Black Panther outfits, correct?
Yeah.
Now siding with the enemy? For financial gain?
They say money talks, BS walks, right?
I'm just saying, like to me, these are all things that I think about, not necessarily saying right or wrong on it. I'm just saying, like, you know, I consider that, and it just doesn't make sense. Like, damn, dude, like, your wife sent them a message, and come on.
You know, Stephen A. questioning if Colin Kaepernick wants to play football. He walked away from $20 million to fight for a cause he believed in.
By the way, no. See, that's another misconception of this whole situation. People keep saying, well, he opted out. He gave away his opportunity to play in this league. That's factually a lie. So here's what happened in that situation. And anybody, you can follow Tim Kawakami via Twitter. You can follow him. He's a beat writer for the Athletic. He writes for the San Francisco 49ers. Just so you know that this is fact. Colin Kaepernick was notified by then general manager George Lynch that he was going to be a June cut. So they were giving him the opportunity to opt out earlier in the process so he'd be able to find another job. He was informed he would not be a 49er any longer. So he opted out before any of the to basically give himself a better opportunity of finding a job. That's why. Now, for everyone that wants to say he could have took the pay cut to go to Denver, if you're guaranteed $12 million, right? $12 million. Why would you give away $5 million to go play for John Elway, who at that time wasn't guaranteeing anything either as far as a future contract? So give up $5 million. To play for me next year with no guarantees of future money coming in. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? So when we talk about the business of the NFL and how it's treated Colin Kaepernick, I don't understand how nobody is sided, you know, standing with him. I don't understand how this man has got so many detractors. When you actually read his story and educate yourself, think about how he's been treated through the whole process. You're talking about a guy who signed, took his team to a Super Bowl, signed a $100 million contract, and only 2 years of it was guaranteed.
Yeah, when he took his team, he took him to a Super Bowl and then a championship, right? In the championship game?
Well, and here's what, once again, like I said, that same year, Joe Flacco has made over $200 million in the NFL. And he's trash, absolute trash. Colin Kaepernick, doing the same things Joe Flacco did, was only guaranteed 2 years on his contract. So give me a break.
Yeah, and let's point out that Kaepernick, in his last season in the NFL, he threw for 2,241 yards. He threw for 10-plus touchdowns for the 49ers. 16.
All right. 16 to only 4 interceptions.
Right, in 2016. And overall, he threw for 72 touchdowns against 30 interceptions as an NFL quarterback. And he's 2 games under 500 as a starter. But even with that being said, again, like you said, that whole Baltimore offense, the Baltimore Ravens offense, is predicated off of Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Predicated off of Colin Kaepernick, as you pointed out.
And I'll quote from Tim Kawakami. I'll quote it. By the way, Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator Greg Roman is doing a lot of the same stuff with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore that he did as Colin Kaepernick's 49ers offensive coordinator in 2012 and 2013. Does it look like the league has figured out Lamar Jackson?
Nope.
Close quote. So don't tell me there's no role. What there are coaches unwilling to coach him. That's what this is about.
And deal with the possibility of what may happen in a locker room or through the media, whatever the case may be. Because he'll have the floor. You know, if he signed to a team, the media is going to be right in his face. And he'll have that platform again. He'll be front and center. He'll be front and center. So there was no, again, regardless of what the people say.
Yeah, but you know what, Lloyd? Whose fault is that? That's the NFL's fault, right? Because the NFL has a policy that every player, that no player is allowed to turn down a post-game interview if requested.
Yeah, I'm just here so I won't get fined. Marshawn
Lynch. That's my point. So this is their fault. In the end of the day, if you think about it, this man can go about his protest and move on with no questions asked, no interviews, nothing. He could go about his business. No distraction, nothing. The NFL, the distraction is caused simply because the NFL mandates he needs to do these interviews. Correct? Another fact nobody talks about.
And again, shout out to Eric Reed, man, because Eric Reed has been down with this dude from the beginning. From the beginning. So you, whether or not he's missing tackles or he's on a team where the defense is ranked almost dead last, and they're not ranked dead last because they're not worse than the Giants. I can tell you that much now. So they're not ranked dead last. And Stephen A. can, you know, he can go at Eric Reed all he wants to, but there are 10 other players on the damn field besides Eric Reed. But despite all of that, he's stuck by this dude's side, man. You know, and in his eyes, he's been calling a spade in his eyes and in his opinion. And we're all entitled to our opinion. And if he feels that way, he has every right to say how he feels. Every right to say how he feels. But, you know, listen, this thing can keep on going. It may not keep on going. But for now, it seems like, you know, it's kind of going to die off. So if something pops off pertaining to this, listeners, we're going to touch up on this again. But it's been an interesting 2 weeks or 2+ weeks, so to speak, pertaining to this. So, you know, let's move forward, you know, and talk a little bit of baseball, Mad Mike. So, you know, the hot stove, the off season, you know, with baseball went underway, winning meetings went underway. Let's talk about the Yankees real quick before we go to a break. Didi Gregorius, all right? There's speculation that the 30-year-old shortstop, Kalanda Dill, you know, as long as a 3-year deal, and the Reds might be that team that'll give it to him. All right? Keep in mind that the Cincinnati Reds signed Didi as an international free agent. All right? He's also been linked to the Phillies, where he could be reunited with former Yankees manager and current Philly skipper, Joe Girardi. All right? So it doesn't seem like the Yankees are entertaining the thought of signing Didi. And it kind of makes sense, you know, if they choose not to, in my opinion, listeners, because obviously Gleyber Torres was a Yankees shortstop, and they would slide Gleyber Torres over the short, put DJ LeMahieu at his natural position with the second base, and, you know, Gio Urshela at first. I don't know what they're going to – I mean, at third base, I don't know what they would do at first base. And you have the whole Francisco Lindor. And I was talking to somebody the other day about Francisco Lindor. Somebody was like, why would the Yankees even go after Lindor? You know, you have Gleyber Torres. You could put Gleyber Torres at second base and put DJ LeMahieu at first base. He played a better first base than Luke Voit or Edwin Encarnacion. And he's going to...
Well, here's what I would do. One, if you move Gleyber Torres to shortstop, you have to trade Miguel Andujar because you're as good a shortstop as he is, defender as Gleyber is, he doesn't have Didi's range. Now, the reason that the Yankees have decided to move on or feeling like they want to move on from Didi is because his range was bad this year. They understood he's coming.
Right, and that's probably why that the Francisco Lindor trade makes sense. If the Yankees pull it off.
I don't know if the Yankees are going to make that move, but here's a name for you to consider. Mike Moustakas. He's a lefty bat. His average is still above league average. His pitches per plate appearance is above league average.
He was the Brewers last year, right?
Correct. Yeah. Former Royal, so he's very familiar with the playoffs, world champion. He can play first base, he can play third base, and with the Brewers, he played second base. So when you're talking about a New York Yankee team that, by the way, DJ LeMahieu, first base, second base, third base. Same thing when you look at Gleyber Torres, second base, shortstop. Gio Urshela is just a third baseman. But what I'm trying to say is the Yankees clearly favor versatility. They clearly favor players that can do more than one thing on the field, which is the other reason I think Miguel Andujar is gone, because he can only do one thing on the field and he doesn't do it very well. And that's, you know, defensively at third base, he's god awful. So just my opinion, especially if they're going to they understand if they're going to use really, you know, these BS baseballs, then clearly you can give away some offense with Gio Urshela.
Well, you know what? I like that suggestion, Mad Mike. I like that. Mike Moustakas suggesting and putting him at first base. I like the end of versatility that he brings. You know, but what happens if they let Didi go? Who gives Gleyber a break is short?
That's a problem, correct? But yeah. I mean, we're talking about a team that has options in the minor leagues. We're talking about a team that you know, Tyler Wade came into his own this year finally. He's a guy that can play second base, third base, shortstop as well. If he's going to be your, you know, if he's finally going to transition out of the minors into your utility first infield job, kind of like Ronald Torres, then you have your answer there. But all due respect, even with their low management, Gleyber Torres should play 145 games a year. And in that case, you're only looking for a shortstop, what, 17 games for the season? They can find that.
Yeah, and let's point out, let's talk about the Yankees supposedly lagging on Gerrit Cole. All right, the Yankees now aren't viewed, you know, as among the early favorites to sign Cole. And let's face it, he's the cream of the free agent pitching crop. And it's likely also they're not the front runners for Steven Strasburg, who could very well end up back with the Nationals. And there's expected to be a ton of competition, you know, for the money thrown at Zach Wheeler. So maybe he might end up, you know, with the New York Yankees. But again, the reason why I'm saying this to you, listeners, is that if you listened to the show a couple weeks ago, we pointed out that Brian Cashman said to us, to the fans, oh, we're definitely going to talk to Strasburg, and we're definitely going to talk to Gerrit Cole, both of them. Why would we not talk to them? You see where I'm getting at with this? Haven't we been through this before? Where we've been told this? And we sit there and get our hopes up, only to be kicked in the nass? And when I mean my nass, I'm talking balls. I'm just like, here we go, man. You know, I saw that, man, and I was like, you know, again, not that it surprised me, but even though it took some wind out of sail, because the Yankees need a top-line starter, man. They need one.
They don't need one. They need two.
Right. I'll take one.
But they need two. They need two. And I made this argument on the show just a couple weeks ago. 14. Telling me that they need a bullpen game. Think about this for a second. The team that won the World Series was the only team this year in the playoffs that didn't go to a bullpen game. They had four reliable starters. The question of when they use those starters and in what order, we can have that argument with the Washington Nationals. But they're the only team that never had to go to a bullpen game. So when you're telling me if you don't have four, you only have three? If you need a bullpen game in the playoffs in a 6-7 game series, then you only have three starters. That tells me the New York Yankees need to sign two. Amen. Simple math. Simple math. And one, it either better be, if it ain't going to be both Cole and Strasburg, it either better be one of them and Zach Wheeler. Simple as that. There's no more. You had every opportunity, meaning Brian Cashman, to fill out your rotation over the last 3 years for this run, and you haven't done it. So now you lose.
They got the money. It's not like they don't have the money.
And if you allow me, it's like, I don't know. I'm telling you, it's like, I was looking at, as a matter of fact, if you think about it, Ken Rosenthal had just recently broke this. the number one target for the Cincinnati Reds, not only Didi Gregorius as in the lineup, is Zach Wheeler for their pitching rotation. Now, he made a great point. Think about this for a second. This would be their rotation. Luis Castillo would be their ace. Sonny Gray, Trevor Bauer, Zach Wheeler, and Anthony DeSclafani, right? And you'd be like, man, Mike, why does that matter? Why are we having a Cincinnati Reds conversation when we're talking about the New York Yankees, right? The New York Yankees traded them Sonny Gray. The New York Yankees should have had Trevor Bauer last season. The New York Yankees 2 years ago refused to give up the prospects, to get Luis Castillo, their ace. And in this scenario, they're outbid by the Cincinnati Reds for Zach Wheeler. So we're now, I've just read you potentially one of the best rotations in baseball, and the Yankees were tied to four of those five starters. How about that?
Oh, that hurt. I'm not going to lie,
How about that?
I'm not going to lie, that hurt.
I'm sorry, they were tied to three and traded one of them to that.
And either way, they were involved with four or had some involvement with four of the five guys. Yeah,
So what does that tell you? That tells you that Cincinnati believes that starting pitching wins. And the New York Yankees, that's more proof they don't believe in starting pitching.
Damn.
So why would I think this offseason is going to be any different?
Oh. Well, there you have it, listeners. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk some New York Knicks. As now Kevin Knox is in the doghouse, we're going to talk that, and we're going to talk some football as both New York teams, the Jets and Giants, were in action this past weekend. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. The first half of the show, listeners, we talk Colin Kaepernick and we talk some New York Yankees dealings with the free agency and all that stuff. But now let's talk some basketball. Let's talk New York Knicks. Let's talk Kevin Knox, as Fizdale has now punished Kevin Knox for three straight games after yanking him in the second quarter versus Cleveland for Wayne Ellington. All right? The least Knox had last season as a rookie is a lot shorter. Knox has played just 19 minutes the past two games, okay? And in Philly, he was benched for defensive lapses against the San Antonio Spurs, was missing open shots. Now, here's what I want to say to that. Is Knox the only player on this team that is guilty of that? Have we not seen that from just about every damn player not named Frank Ntilikina on this roster? Have we not? Have we not? Well, and most guys in the NBA, listeners, their whole life is playing 30 minutes. And Knox was up there last season or close to it. It's the new year. And this is killing this young man. It's killing him mentally. Killing him mentally. All right? After him being yanked out of the game in San Antonio, he went on a bike and ran and rode the bike for 20 minutes just to keep in shape. And if he needs a longer chance to get comfortable, you know, that was a question. He doesn't need it. To me, he looks better this year than he did last year.
That's the problem, Lloyd. That's the problem. To a lot of people, he's better. To a lot of people, he's built his body. To a lot of people, he's shooting the ball better. To a lot of people, he understands the game more. A lot of people out there see the difference in Kevin Knox. Here's the problem that I have with him. One, everyone knows that we did not like the Kevin Knox trade draft pick. We know that if you have a questionable motor coming out, the New York Knicks are not allowed to use motor as an excuse for him, because to me, that's an indictment of this coaching staff and it's an indictment of this front office, because he had a questionable motor coming out of Kentucky. So you still took him, which said you believed that you could fix it. So if you haven't fixed it, it's not the player's fault. The player is who the player has always been. It's your fault. It's your development. So you need to figure out what buttons you need to push and you need to fix it. That's one. Two, Kevin Knox is not the only one that they're doing this to. That 4-point loss in Philadelphia, where Julius Randle and Marcus Morris played hero ball, where they combined 13 for 34, where they combined to miss 22 shots on 13 of 35 from the field. You know that game where they missed 22 shots combined and we lost by 4 points? What, two baskets that game? Marcus Morris played more minutes than Dennis Smith Jr., Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox, and Alonzo Trier combined. Let me say it again. Marcus Morris played more minutes than Dennis Smith Jr., Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox, and Alonzo Trier combined. Why is that significant? Because those four are part of your young core you are trying to develop to win in the long term, to attract real superstar free agents. That's why that's important.
Yeah, and the trials and tribulations for Alonzo Trier is even more severe.
Yeah, you but know, you want to know what bothers me?
He was a rookie revelation last year after being undrafted. The all-man out. And for five straight games with Fitzgerald saying he wanted to keep a consistent rotation. Come on, man.
Lloyd, they tried to turn him into a point guard. That's the part that no one's talking about. And that's what pisses me off. A guy with the name Iso Zoe, this team thought would be a good point guard candidate in the offseason. Really? A kid who already had his struggles on offense, on defense, is now going to defend the faster perimeter point guards in this league? That's one. Two, a guy with the moniker Iso Zoe converts to point guard. What's the one thing that isolation players do? Create for themselves. So you took his biggest strength away from him by now forcing him to incorporate the entire team into the offense. He's not a starter. The reason he's not a starter is because he's a nut. He's a ball hawk. But he's a good source of points off the bench, which is exactly what he was last year. So once again, whose fault is it? The player or this coaching staff in this front office that designed this plan, this program for these guys in the offseason? The only reason Frank Ntilikina looks the way he does, Lloyd, is because he left the Knicks to go play with his national team. And they know his strengths, and they helped him this offseason. That's why.
That's facts. Hashtag facts. Hashtag facts. Oh, my gosh, man. I don't know what this... one minute, they're talking about firing him. The next minute, they're not. He's talking about James Dolan comes to him every day and tells him that his job is in, good standings. Come on, man. Enough of this BS already. Clean house while there's still a chance to save this season.
What I said last week, Lloyd, I don't hate liars. I hate people that question my common sense with things like you just mentioned about James Dolan and Fizdale. Like, that's what I don't like. Don't insult my intelligence. Don't insult my common sense.
I mean, how...
Tell all the stories you want.
We talk about the Knicks have a roster that's good enough to earn a playoff spot. They was beating the San Antonio Spurs by 15 points. They was beating another... Who was the other team they was beating by 15? The Philly. They was beating Philly by 15 points.
And they were also beating Orlando by 15 points when they blew that game. 13 points.
All three of those games. Who's to blame for that? Who's to blame for that? To me... It all falls on David Fizdale's shoulders.
Yeah, because and how about here's another stat for David Fizdale.
Huh?
Here's another stat for David Fizdale and why I don't understand their treatment of Alonzo Trier. The New York Knicks run isolation plays the ninth most often in the league. They're 29th in the league in points off isolation. So they are a top 10 team as far as running ISO plays. They're 29th. They're better than one team in scoring off isolation plays. Think about that.
And if not only isolation players on a bench.
Not only that. Remember, because the New York Knicks thought that and I'm going to put this on the front office, not on Fizdale, this one, this stat. The first stat is on Fizdale and his ISO offense. This stat, because the Knicks went to sign 19 power forwards this offseason, they are fourth. They run the fourth most post-ups in basketball. They are 26th in the league in scoring off of that. Fourth. Now this stat, they're top five team in running post-ups. They're only better than four teams in scoring off post-ups. So you tell me what this team does well. You tell me what system this team has. You tell me why a coach who relies so heavily on isolation basketball, why this team didn't think D'Angelo Russell was the best player on the market for this team. Yeah. You tell me that.
Listen, man.
And I started thinking about it, right? His only season, he coached 2 years in Memphis, right? He was fired midway through the first one. But think about this. He had Mike Conley Jr. running ISO basketball. Mike, that's why that worked, because he had a premier point guard running isolation basketball, deciding who got the ball, when they got the ball. Well, we gave him a lot of credit for the development of Marc Gasol, but we also ignored the fact that his relationship with Marc Gasol deteriorated. And why do you think that is? Probably because Lionel Hollins runs a ball movement system where everybody fed off everybody, where a guy's talent, a multi-talented, multi-faceted game like Marc Gasol has, where he can dribble the ball, pass the ball, he can shoot the ball, he benefited from it, where an isolation game doesn't work to his strengths. Now we know why, in my opinion, Fizdale was ran out of there, because he only coaches to the point guard's strength. And here he doesn't have a point guard. So what happens?
Yeah, mind you, and they're playing zone. How the hell are you playing zone, which is supposed to take away giving up the three-point shot? Because the best way to beat a zone is go inside. Inside,
but you know what bothers
outside.
Me? You know what bothers me? If you're going to go to a zone defense, who on this roster should know how to play zone defense? The kids that are a year, 2 years removed from the college game, where they play zone defense. For some reason, you're trying to play zone with veterans that have played man-to-man their entire careers? What are we doing?
Yeah, I agree,
what,
man.
What the hell are we doing?
Oh, man. Listen, man. Enough is enough with this dude, man.
But I do want to touch on one thing.
Yeah, before we move on to football.
Before we move on, I want to say this. The Brooklyn Nets, are 3 games under 500 with Kyrie, and they're 3 games over 500 without him. Do you think, especially when you see the way Boston is balling out this year without him, are we almost to the point where we say he is more detrimental to a lineup, to a team's success than he is?
Yeah, despite his talent,
worth the money.
Great point. Despite his talent, and mind you, he's hurt again with a shoulder impingement. That's what they say, and he's not going to play against the game in Boston, and
no.
You know. So,
but you know, not for nothing. I don't necessarily know if that's about his health. To me, I just think he's got such a fragile makeup. I don't know that they want him on the court for that. I don't.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but that's my take on it.
Well, I mean, that's
if he plays, we'll see. If he doesn't play the game after Boston, I'll say that he's still hurt. If he plays the game right after Boston, I'll say that this was about protecting his mental makeup.
All right, so we'll see what happens, but let's move on to some football, and let's talk about the Jets. And it was just 11 days earlier that Jets CEO and Chairman Christopher Johnson felt the need to publicly state that he was not firing Adam Gase in an effort to quiet the noise around the team, okay? And now Johnson watched Gase push all the right buttons, okay, as his team delivered his most complete performance, in my opinion, in quite some time. They destroyed the Raiders 34-3 at MetLife Stadium yesterday. Okay, and the Raiders 6-5 entered the game, you know, in the thick of the AFC playoff race, riding a 3-game winning streak. All right, solid football team. I've seen them play the last couple games, and they were solid, and the Jets are on a 3-game win streak for the first time since 2017. Congratulations, Matt Mike. Now they face the dismal Bengals and Dolphins in the next 2 weeks with hopes of a 5-game winning streak entering Thursday night game in Baltimore. And at 4-7, the New York Jets have stabilized their season. No, I don't think they're making the playoffs. I'm not going there. But the win over the Raiders was their first against the AFC team, and they have yet to beat a team in their division. Solid football.
Lloyd, I can see this team going 8-8, and I don't think it's a stretch to say that. I know you're calling me crazy, but like you said, they can beat the Bengals. They could beat the Bills. They'll probably lose to the Ravens. But I will say this. If there's a team that can beat the Ravens, it's the New York Jets. And with their, you know, I mean, they're number two in the league in run defense. So if you take away their running game, we don't know, because we haven't seen it yet, but we don't know what Baltimore looks like without the ability to run the ball. So I don't think they'll win it, but I think that game can be interesting on a high like that. They should be able to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers and this guy, Mason Rudolph.
And I think you're right. Just a few weeks ago, listeners and Mad Mike, remember, I tabbed this team as making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
And that was right before they pulled out the stinker against the Patriots, but still.
It's crazy when you think about it, where this team was mentally. And this is why I say that it's, you know, they went into the season without a kicker. They have a kicker. They win that Buffalo Bill game week one. If they don't play Miami at the trade deadline and Jamal Adams is stuck in that trade controversy, they probably beat Miami the first time. And now me and you are having this conversation about a team that's 6-5 in a playoff push and not 4-7. But, you know, I think the last week of the season they'll get a win, too. I think Buffalo will have clinched the playoffs by then, and they'll be resting their starters, in my opinion, being that they're not going to win the division. They'll be resting in week 17. So I think the Jets have a legitimate shot at 8-8. But 7-9, 8-8, that's where they're going to finish.
You know, the key is finishing the season off on a positive note at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? That's the key. And if the Jets could do that, that'd be something good for them moving forward into next season. Be good for them, in my opinion. All right, but let's move on to the grades, man, Mike. And let's start with the offense. And I thought that Adam Gase was in a groove calling plays, and the Jets' offense looked rejuvenated, and they gained 401 yards. The second straight week that they hit 400 yards. Sam Darnold, 20 of 29. 315, two passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown, all right? Didn't turn the ball over, made some beautiful throws. Robbie Anderson, 4 catches, 85 yards, a touchdown, had his best game in weeks. The offensive line opened up some holes, allowed just one sack, and it was a complete performance by the offense. The best performance this year by the offense. I'm giving them an A+, Mad Mike.
Yes, I'm giving them an A. I thought it was a clean game for them. I thought that they wasted some opportunities. Lloyd, I do want to ask you one question about this game. When is the NFL going to get out of their own way? Like, of all the pass interference calls that have not been reversed this year, just last week, the DeAndre Hopkins call, how do you take away the Jets' first touchdown? The coach didn't even challenge it. How do you review the touchdown? They said during the touchdown review, they caught offensive pass interference. And then later on in the game, missed the same exact where the Raiders wiped out two Jets, and it was not offensive pass interference. It just made no sense. Outside of that, I thought that this offense clicked. Robbie Anderson showed up. Lev Bell showed up in the pass game. We even had a Ty Montgomery sighting.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the only reason I didn't give him an A+ was simply because they once again this week were bit by some costly penalties. They really were.
Yeah, the NFL is dropping the ball back with this pass interference nonsense, man.
No, it was unbelievable.
It's so awful. It's awful.
Even the commentators were like, how can you review this play and call that pass interference? It's a rub route.
Awful.
They collided. They literally ran into each other. The offensive player can run into the defensive player as long as it's not intentional. They ran into each other. That's it. Even the announcers were saying it. And I'm just like, we just don't know what it is anymore. We don't.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to this defense. And Jamal Adams said that the Jets were upset they gave up the 3 points. You know, that's about the only negative you can take away from this one. They shut down Josh Jacobs. He only had 10 rushes. For 34 yards, they continue to show why they're one of the best run-stopping defenses in the NFL. They forced Derek Carr, who was 15-27 for 127 yards, one interception to the bench in the third quarter. Greg Williams' group, again, man, kudos to Greg Williams, was suffocating a lot. They only allowed 208 total yards. And Brian Poole capped off with a pick six that put the game away. I'm giving the defense an A, man, Mike.
I gave the defense an A. Derek Carr was constantly under pressure. The run defense, once again, stifling another young stud running back who's been tearing it up, gets shut down. I mean, you can tell me whatever you want about Adrian Peterson and Darius Geis getting shut down, not a big deal, but we're talking about shutting down, you know, Saquon Barkley now, since the Leo trade I'm talking about. We're talking about shutting down Saquon Barkley. We're talking about shutting down, you know, Jacobs. Like, come on, man. Just to see, do you realize how bad that Leo trade was for the Giants? They traded Leo, and they were ranked sixth in run defense, and they have somehow jumped all the way up to second in the league in run defense since trading him.
Oh, you don't have to tell me that. We knew that from
A-plus.
The jump. We knew A-plus, that
job.
So, all right, so now let's move on to special teams. And the only group dragging down the GPA, in my opinion, for this week, and it's only because of the two miscues. Kicker Sam Ficken missed a 48-yard field goal, but did hit two others, all right? Punter Braxton Berrios, did I pronounce his name right?
Oh, the punt returner, Braxton Berrios, yeah.
Yeah, Berrios inexplicably let a punt drop inside the Jets' 10. He later had a return for 26 yards, so he made up for it. The coverage team was good, in my opinion, bottling up the Raiders' return to Trevor Davis. I'm giving him a B.
I mean, I gave them an A as well, because I thought that the return for Berrios, I do think that it was a huge mistake to let that ball drop. But I will say this, taking weather into consideration, it was nasty. It was windy. It was wet. If you're not 100% confident that you're going to catch that ball, whether you're inside the 10 or not, they tell you stay away from it. Simply put, you stay away from the ball and because you don't want to fumble, you don't want to touch it, you don't want any mishaps down inside your 10. So I wasn't as critical of him of that play, but I can understand why everybody else was. The return I thought was a great return at the time, and don't forget that return forced a late hit out of bounds and gave the Jets an additional 15 yards, and that was inside 2 minutes at the end of the first half. So that return was actually much, much bigger than just the number. Sam Ficken, he did make the two field goals, and the only reason I'm not faulting him for the 48-yard miss is because, once again, it was really wet. It was windy. You know how kicking in the Meadowlands can be. I don't even think it's the Meadowlands anymore. MetLife Stadium, yeah. Yeah, sorry. So you know how the wind's swirling there. So I didn't want to hold it against him. But I will say this. This kid is unbelievably below average on anything between 48+. And the Jets need to figure that out. Because in this day and age, kickers are kicking 55, 60 yarders like we pop Tic Tacs.
Hashtag facts.
So.
Hashtag facts. All right, now let's move on to coaching. And you know how badly I've ripped Adam Gates the entire season for the most part. And you got to give him some credit now, listeners. Gates, he kept this team together, and he has them on a 3-game winning streak. His play calling was terrible on Sunday, you know, and he had the offensive rolling. I mean, I'm sorry, not terrible. It was terrific. I'm sorry. It was terrific. His offense was terrific. His play calling, I'm sorry.
Forgive him, guys, because he's so used to calling it terrible
That is true. His play calling was terrific, and he had the offense rolling. And Greg Williams, obviously, Greg Williams is Greg Williams, and we've praised Greg Williams the entire season. Entire season. I'm giving him an A-plus, Matt Mike, and this might be the only time you see me give this coaching staff an A-plus. But I got to give credit where credit is due. A-plus to the coaching staff.
I gave him an A-minus, and I'm going to be very unfair in my critique of them. I gave him an A-minus simply because Jamal Adams didn't have a sack this week. That's
the only reason. That's pretty tough, man.
No, I mean, but
you're like that professor, that won't budge an inch, man.
Jamal Adams has 6 sacks. The record for sacks by a DB is 8. If in a lost season like this, the one thing I'd be doing right now is he'd be blitzing almost every down because he deserves to break that record, in my opinion. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're winning games, but at the same time, let him come out of this season with something like that. There's no reason why playing some of these, you know, playing, I won't say they're a bad team, but you know what I mean? Like, this guy should have 9 sacks at the end of this year. You play the Cincinnati Bengals, you play the Miami Dolphins, you play the Pittsburgh Steelers. He should have 3 more sacks this season. They should make it their business.
All right. Matt Mike being a tough cookie with that one, listeners. But let's talk about the New York Giants, and we're going to be real quick with our summary of the New York Giants before we move on to the grades. Well, I'm going to be real quick, I should say, and I don't know if Matt Mike has anything to add to this.
I have one thought that I want to add for all the Danny Dimes. I don't want to say supporters, but all the Danny Dimes, he can't do no wrong.
The Giants gave away points against the Bears, committed costly turnovers, surrendered chunk plays on defense to a struggling quarterback, and need a saving himself from being benched. So all the same mistakes that this team has made for months before bye week returned in a loss against the Bears. The 7-game losing streak is the longest for the Giants since 2014 under Tom Coughlin. And after that 7th loss, Mara fumed on a bus that ultimately stuck. You know, with his 2-time Super Bowl winning coach for one more season, Shermer has earned not so much of the benefit of the doubt when it comes to this because he's 7-20 in the past 2 seasons. 7-20, and the 2-9 New York Giants last lost more than 7 in a row, 9 in a single season in 1976, and they could be pushing the envelope with that, unless they got to play the Washington Redskins, who won, or the Miami Dolphins, who lost to the Cleveland Browns. So Aldrick Rojas, man, missed field goals of 40, listen, be humble. Sit down. Excellent season last year. Excellent season. The gods have a weird way of throwing you a big, humble pie to the face.
Oh, with him, Lloyd, I think with him, first of all, you miss a kick in 5 straight games. Even for some of the worst kickers, that's pretty damn hard to do. But I think with him, his job was never safe, if you know what I mean. Like, every year he was kicking year to year to year, and he finally got some job security. And so I think naturally he's let himself go. My personal opinion of him. I don't know that to be fact, but with job security comes, you know, I'm no longer living day to day. I'm no longer kicking week to week. I got security. You know what I mean? I'm here for 3 more years. I can have a down year. What are they going to do? Cut me? Says a lot about him, in my opinion.
Man, this football team is bad, man. It's real bad. Bad, and I don't, you know what? I don't see a silver lining in this cloud, man. Even despite them having, they don't really have $100 million to spend, because when you take away, you know, the money that they're going to have to spend for rookies and stuff like that, they're looking at probably having about $56 million to spend in free agency. And they need a lot, man. And they just traded away a 3rd-round pick for Leonard Williams. So they're going to have to use money to sign him or lose another draft pick the following year. Like, that was just stupid, man. This dude is destroying this team. Gettleman, I'm talking about.
Not only that, but you got to think about this. I didn't even get to make my Daniel Jones point yet. I'll make that after. But you got to think about this. When you talk about the money and the holes, right? Some of that money that you think you're going to have to spend, that comes from releasing Janoris Jenkins, right? Getting out from under that contract. Has DeAndre Baker showed you he's a number one cornerback where you're going to be able to use the savings from Janoris Jenkins on another position on the field? No, he hasn't. Which means what? That you're going to have to go from having Janoris Jenkins' $11 million salary to probably having to sign a number one cornerback on the market, which what are they going for nowadays? $16, $17 million? Think about that for a second. So I you just said they might not have so much money. You're right, they might not, because they might actually be paying even more to the cornerback position next year. Oh, has Sam Beal and Julian Love shown you that they're capable of being the number two, and DeAndre can move to number one, where now all of a sudden you can use that those savings on a player like an offensive lineman, maybe a real upgrade at center, somebody that's young enough but really good enough to develop a chemistry with Daniel Jones? And don't tell me it doesn't matter, because I'll tell you one thing. The New York Jets this year made a huge mistake because Adam Gase did not believe in Jonathan Harrison. They ignored the chemistry between the center and the quarterback last year that they had built and through the offseason, and look how they struggled. Jonathan Harrison is back at center, and the New York Jets are moving forward. So I'm just saying, like, those are things that Giant fans need to consider. Not only that, but like you said, you just gave up a third-round pick for Leonard Williams. He still has no sacks. He's still not disrupting anything. I saw a Giant fan tell me that he got double-teamed for the entire game. You saw Leonard Williams double-teamed the entire game? Did you?
No, I didn't.
And if you did, what does that say about Dexter Lawrence at nose tackle, a first-round pick this year? If Leonard Williams is drawing all the double teams, why is Dexter Lawrence, a first-round defensive lineman of Dave Gettleman, not getting to the quarterback? Can't have it both ways, right?
Yeah,
so you tell me, if either Leonard sucks or Lawrence sucks.
Lawrence is the one that's getting double-teamed. He's the one that's getting double-teamed. And again, you know, that personnel that they have is not a 3-4 personnel. It's a 4-3 personnel. So none of those guys are going to be able to rush the quarterback. Not Leonard Williams, not Dexter Lawrence, not Dalvin Thomason, and not, I'm drawing a blank on the other kid's name.
Carter?
Yeah, no, he wears number 95, D-tackle. He was drafted last year. I'm sorry, but either way, they got defensive tackles playing defensive end. That's not going to crack it. Not going to crack it. Let's move on to these grades, and let's start with the offense. And I would say look no further than this, all right? The Giants were 1 for 12 on third down conversions. And this was an ep showing. Only 243 yards. Daniel Jones, 21-36, 2 TDs, threw for just 150 yards, and yet again lost another fumble, which to his credit, all right, it was a blindside strip sack by Khalil Mack, all right? He looked sluggish. He looked sluggish. Saquon Barkley, 17 carries for 59 yards, needs to rush the ball more than 17 times, all right? Did not get on track at all, was not a factor. 2 catches for 1 yard, he dropped an important pass. Longest reception was Golden Tate. 23-yard touchdown, which we don't expect no more than 23 yards, 20-plus yards, passes from this team. Khalil Mack, he wasn't a game wrecker, you know what I'm saying? But he certainly made a great play. And it was good to see Sterling Shepard back on the field. All right? But I'm giving him an F. Offense F. Bruh, out of here.
I give him an F. I think Daniel Jones' numbers were inflated. One, the first touchdown is a 3-yard touchdown pass. I hate, you know me. I hate when teams get inside that 5-yard line and reward the quarterback instead of the running back. That bothers me. Absolutely hate it. And I think they did it to kind of pad his stats, because we know that this coach, if he's going to keep his job, it's not because Saquon Barkley is greatest, because he's showing he can show based on the stats that Daniel Jones is improving. So that's why I as soon as I saw it, I thought immediately that's why they did it. Not only that, but like you said, 150 yards, 86 of them came in the fourth quarter. 59 of those came on the second to final drive. 86 yards in the fourth quarter, and the final 2 drives of the game were 79 of them. Think about that for a second. So he literally had 7 yards on every other drive besides the final 2. Not why is that significant? It's because the Bears went into a prevent defense towards the end of the game. The game was decided 19-7 already. Buster Screen on a 4th and 18 for some reason lost Golden Tate, who broke free on an in route. He was defending the 5-yard line and forgot that you can actually score a touchdown and don't just have to get first downs in this game. So that was more what that issue was. Otherwise, Daniel Jones has a piss poor game. I mean, we're talking about a game where he potentially could have thrown 0 touchdowns and less than 100 yards. Think about that. And then what conversation are we having?
We've had the conversation. He ain't worthy of no damn number 6 pick.
So I'm just saying. So, you know, it's funny because we were just having these conversations, and this is what the media in this town does, where they're like Danny Dimes, future. Do the Jets have their future? Sam Darnold's struggling. And now look, Sam looks freaking amazing. And Daniel Jones, I mean, 18 turnovers in 8 games. What is it? 7-game losing streak right now? So think about that. I give him an F.
He's literally turned the ball over in every single game he's played in, I believe.
Yes, he has.
All right, so now let's move on to this defense. And it's not easy to make Mitchell Trubisky a winning quarterback, okay? But the Giants did just that. Trubisky was 25 of 41 for 278 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, nothing special. Nothing special. He had a big end zone interception by Alec Ogletree and another by rookie Julian Love. You know, stopping the run, 65 yards allowed, which actually that's pretty good for the Giants because they're known to get ran all over. Rookie quarterback Corey Ballantyne was just getting torched. Holding penalties on Janoris Jenkins. Another 5, a golden, Marcus Golden sack. And all but handed the Bears their first TD. This unit deserved better considering it gave up only 1 legitimate touchdown drive and allowed only 3 points in the first half. But with that being said, I'm going to give them a C-.
I gave them a D. I know that Mitchell Trubisky and Daniel Jones in the first half probably set quarterbacking back 30 years. But we also can't ignore the fact that they were saved on a 60-yard bomb that was completed by a hands-to-the-face penalty on the offensive line. Mind you, on that same exact play, the Giants got away with hands to the face by the defensive line. So the game could have been probably a runaway earlier. And, man, I don't know. I didn't give them an F simply because they had the interception in the end zone. But if you consider that, Mitchell Trubisky is just an awful quarterback. If it was anybody else, this game would have been a lot worse. We're talking about, you know, maybe 30, 40 points this defense gave up.
All right, so now let's move on to special teams. And Aldrick Rojas missed field goals attempts from 42 and 43 yards, which is unacceptable. All right? Terrible snap by Zach Diassi. Even though the snap never got off the grass, I thought that the hole was good by Riley Dixon. That's the punter, the holder. And that was the one he missed on the 42-yarder. And, you know, Dixon had a 62-yard punt only to roll, you know, dead at the Chicago 6-yard line and put 4 of his 5 kicks inside the 20. Jabril Peppers scooped up a punt on a bounce, had a 40-yard return in the second quarter. And Eli Penny was called for a holding penalty on the first punt return. All right? God, like you said, in this day and age with field goal kickers kicking 50-plus yard field goals, missing 40-plus yard attempts, those should be gimmies at this point. Should be gimmies. And if it wasn't for Riley Dixon's punts, I would have given the special teams an F. But because of Riley Dixon's punts, I'm going to give him a D-.
I give him an F. You miss 2 field goals and you lose by 5? You get an F. I don't know how else to say it. They missed 2 field goals and they lost by 5. So they get an F from me. 5 straight games with a missed field goal or extra point. This team is constantly leaving points on the field. You know what? I'll give them a D-, because the punt return put this team in a good spot at a time when nothing was happening for the offense. So I'll give Jabril Peppers the D. The punt thing was good, but it's not like Chicago has a great special teams either, which is pretty sad to say about them. D-minus is fine with me.
All right, so now let's move on to the coaching. All right, and Pat Shurmur is finding it impossible to get this team in sync. Why? Because maybe he's just not a good damn head coach, listeners. And thus, when the defense put in a credible performance, so to speak, against a bad Chicago offense, the offense cannot get out of its own way. All right, he has to get his receivers to run routes beyond the first down marker. Has to. And the plan was to even get younger on defense with Sam Bill getting snaps. All right, often replacing DeAndre Baker. You're going to replace youth with youth. Isn't this the time you let these guys get out on the field and take the lumps upside their head for the learning curve? You're benching one rookie in favor of another?
Well, that's on the GM. I mean, that's a conversation for another day, because Janoris Jenkins should have been traded for some form of a draft pick before the deadline. And you should have, really, Julian Love, Sam Beal, and DeAndre Baker should be on the field at all times. So I do agree with you. The coach has to rotate properly.
Yeah, so, all right, well, I'm giving him an F. Out of here.
I gave the coach an F as well, simply because this team didn't have any answers until the game didn't matter anymore. And I know you're going to be like, well, man, Mike, 5-point loss, how can you say the game didn't matter? Well, because if you watch that game, you knew that they were never going to win until Chicago took their foot off the gas. Why a bad team like Chicago takes their foot off the gas, I don't know. But this coach didn't have any answers. Once again, 17 carries for Saquon Barkley, not nearly enough. What concerns me with Saquon Barkley is if he doesn't make that big play, you know, that night, that day, his numbers are pretty average. So, that concerns me. That tells me that this coaching staff doesn't know how to use him.
Great point.
I just don't think that they know how to use him. His numbers, think about how bad his numbers would be if he didn't break off. He had a 20 in that same fourth quarter where they were running the prevent defense on that touchdown drive. He had a run of 22 yards and a run of 7 yards. So think about that. He had 29 rush yards on those two carries. Take away those two carries. What did he have for the day, Lloyd? 30 yards, 17, 15 carries for 30-some yards? 2 yards per carry for Saquon Barkley, a generational-type talent, according to a Hall of Famer. He's already been fitted. He's been touched by God, according to this GM. So who's at fault? Coaching staff. My opinion. Yeah.
Well, there you have it, listeners. That's our grades for both New York football teams. And now we come to the point of the show that we all know and love, where we let Mad Mike get on the mic and give us his 2 cents about pissing him off. And I'm hearing him sighing already, which means he is upset about something. So, Mad Mike, what is your rant of the week, brother?
I'm just upset with Hal Steinbrenner. I'm upset with Hal Steinbrenner. I don't know how this team is going to let this window go. I don't know how the New York Yankees are going to be outbid by any team for any starting pitcher on this market. I just don't get it. And I'm telling you right now that it's got to be true, because it's being written everywhere. They're going to be outbid for Zach Wheeler. They're already not in the conversation for Gerrit Cole. And we haven't even heard anything as far as the Yankees and Steven Strasburg. So we know the top 3 pitchers on this market are not going to be Yankees. Unacceptable to me. Unacceptable. I don't want to hear it. I don't understand when we became penny pinchers. I don't know when we became sisters of the poor. I don't get it. It's pissing me off, man. The offseason is 2 days, 3 days in, and I already know we have no hope. None. None, Lloyd. None.
I know that's depressing, man. It's depressing. You know what? You know what's going to happen? This team is not going to win the world. Until they correct that, they're not going to win another World Series, man. It's just not.
No team won the World Series without spending money. No team. The Washington Nationals. Look at Max Scherzer, bought. Patrick Corbin, bought. Their entire bullpen, bought. Go up and down the lineup. Go up. They spend money. They spend money. Don't tell me they don't. Well, Mike, the Washington Nationals lost Bryce Harper in free agency, yeah? And what did they do? They didn't pocket the money like Hal Steinbrenner pockets the money. They lost them because they had Juan Soto, who makes nothing, and they used those savings to bring in Patrick Corbin. What are the Yankees doing? Nothing.
Oh man. Thanks for kicking me in a nutsack again with that one, man.
I'm just as upset as everybody else, man.
That's facts. It really
is. No Yankee team has ever won a World Series without money. They are so sensitive to this idea that they're the evil empire, that they're a Death Star, that they won't win money. They won't spend money, rather, to win. Well, they need to figure it out, because David Wells wasn't a farm system pitcher back in the 90s run. David Cone wasn't. Jimmy Key wasn't. Roger Clemens wasn't. El Duque wasn't. I go up and down the line. The only guy that was Andy Pettit. They spent money and they won. Somebody wake up Hal Steinbrenner.
Amen. So there you have it, listeners. And with that being said, that brings us to a close of this week's show, listeners. I hope you enjoyed the show. Listeners, please start spreading the news about this wonderful show we have to your family, friends, and loved ones. And we want to thank you for sticking with us. We want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for rocking out with us. And listeners, again, we will not be doing a show this coming Monday because of the Thanksgiving holiday. So me and Mad Mike want to wish you and your families a happy, safe Thanksgiving. Go out on that turkey, put it down, gain a few pounds, and then go to the gym and work it out. Work it off. Work it off. You got any well wishes you want to send to the listeners, Mad Mike? Normally, I'm the one running my mouth. You got anything you want to say to them for the holidays?
Just want to tell them get fat and enjoy all your loved ones, because you don't know who's going to be with us next year.
There you have it, listeners. So, listeners, please have a safe, blessed week, safe, blessed holiday, and me and the Mad Mike will see you in 14 days. So, hey, yo, happy Thanksgiving, baby.
Appreciate you, big bro. Happy Turkey Day to you as well. Shouts to Mad Mike. Happy Thanksgiving. And all of you guys that are listening, happy Thanksgiving. Get fat or die trying is what I like to say. So to everybody celebrating Friendsgiving, Thanksgiving, just enjoy the time. Make sure you spend it with loved ones, whoever they may be. It's probably going to be a couple NFL games on, as they traditionally are. And the Knicks are still trash, so we're thankful for that. What else is new? We'll catch y'all in 14 days, because the show's not dropping next week, as Lloyd said. So head over to LloydAThompson.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PartOfMyFresh.com, everywhere that podcasts are available. And follow at Lloyd A. Thompson on Instagram and Twitter as well. Once again, we'll catch y'all in 14 days with a brand new episode, Part of My Fresh Sports, Lloyd A. Thompson, Mad Mike. Peace.